I promote the idea that we can live to be 120 and healthy. It's pretty clear how to measure 120. So somebody who wants to be 121 years old, it's like, okay, I think I understand how to do that. I could take the date of my birth, add 120 to it, and then I would know the year that I would live until. Maybe it's a little bit more meaningful if we were to say, okay, I'm part of the way already. We'll see. I am a certain age. What do I do? Well, take 120 and subtract your current age from it, and those are the number of years that you still have remaining to live healthily to be 120. So the idea of being healthy, though, is a little bit more ambiguous. Maybe it's still mathematical in nature, but it's also subjective. So we use numbers in an amazing variety of ways. So, and we could use numbers to measure certain aspects of health, such as our height. We could measure that in English scale or in metric, you know, inches and centimeters. And we go, okay, yep, that's true. And then we would take our age and maybe the ratio of our height, age, and weight, and we would compare those and make some sort of determination, yep, that's healthy, or oops, nope, I'm underweight, nope, I'm overweight. If you've ever had a blood test and you've ever seen the results, you'll go, wow, everything is numerical. All those different categories of stuff that floating around in our blood, like, yep, this got this much and that much, and they show not a specific number, but usually a range. If you're within this range, you're healthy. If you're too high, too low, not so healthy. I think one of the issues that we have to deal with as we grow older is range of motion. Now, this can obviously be relevant even to a young person. You could see how some people can flex their arms or legs or muscles and do splits and things, and other people look at that and go, yikes, my body doesn't have that range of motion. But if we wanted to measure it, we would, let's see, I'm going to do the range of motion. I can turn my head to the left or the right. I can measure it in degrees. I could measure it in inches or centimeters again. Real common for us to measure heart rate, pulse, and the speed at which a person's heart rate returns to normal, say after they've exercised. And that was one of the issues of a stress test that you do medically, you know, for people who have some question about their cardio health. Is like, okay, how quickly can your body go back to normal resting? And they measure that in terms of time. Lung capacity, that's huge, right? Don't we want to breathe? It's like, yep, I take how many breaths a minute, and what is the capacity of that? Because it's pretty clear that oxygen is a key component to health. Oxygen is one of the things that is necessary in order for there to be sufficient voltage in the cells of our bodies, sufficient voltage so they can produce offspring, they can produce healthy cells. That lack of voltage, that lack of oxygen, means that if there's any kind of cell multiplication going on, the cells that are being multiplied are not that healthy. So it's like, oh, lung capacity, big deal. And we could measure the number of minutes that we exercise during the day. We could measure the number of minutes we meditate in order to let go of stress, the number of hours and minutes that we sleep, the number of miles that we might have walked, even the amount of time that we move our heart rate or cardio up to like 70 or 80% of capacity in an exercise program. But all of those things can be measured and put into numbers. Even things that are incredibly subjective are put into numbers for our convenience. Say in a medical situation, somebody will say to a patient, you know, okay, all right, Here, use this scale 0 to 10, and here are some words that describe it. Tell me how severe your pain is. It's non-existent, or it's extremely severe. Those are 0 and 10. Or some gradation in between. So convert it to a number so I have an idea of what you're experiencing. And then doctors and other people will be like, ooh, this person's really in pain. We can do something, you know, pain pills or some other process, maybe move them, adjust them so they're more comfortable. So it's helpful to know what somebody is going through. All of us know that a body temperature of a healthy adult human being is about 98.6. 98.6. So what we would do is interpret a higher or lower temperature as, maybe this means illness. Something's going on. We've got to look a little more deeply into this. When you think of vision and hearing, we go, well, we measure them as well, right? We all have heard the phrase 20/20, which is considered normal. And that's really what we're looking for. Is this vision within a range of normalcy, or do we need to take corrective steps? You know, reading glasses, prescription glasses, for whatever situation is discovered, nearsightedness, farsightedness, astigmatism. And hearing? Can you hear the range of that we consider to be normal for human beings? Or are there certain sounds, certain tones that a person cannot hear? Now, we're not going to be able to hear like our dogs are able to hear. They have an acute sense of hearing, far greater than ours, but we can measure what ours are, and if it's not up to par, not in that normal range, then we take steps like hearing aids or other things that can help us deal with that issue that we've been able to measure numerically. So we understand how to use these numbers to give us a sense of, okay, I'm relatively healthy, I'm relatively unhealthy, those sort of things. We even try to measure emotionality and mentality the same way we do physicality. And there's a good reason for that. There's a business principle that says if you want to manage it, you have to measure it. And hoping it's just going to take care of itself, not that valuable an approach. So we do want to be able to manage our health and other things in our lives, like our checkbook, our finances, right? You do want to be able to manage that. You want to be able to manage your finances by using, what is it, a budget. A budget is a management tool. Yeah, I get it. All of us are familiar with the idea of intelligence testing when we were younger. Right? Back in the day, intelligence testing was limited to IQ. It's like, take these tests, we're going to score them, and we're going to come up with some numbers, and based upon those numbers, we're going to classify you and everybody else on a scale. A certain range says, okay, that's healthy. You're mentally healthy. You're too low. And I don't know what words are used to describe that situation to the person whose score is low, but not that complimentary, probably. And people who are way off the charts, extremely high, you go, there's some sort of thought that below normal and above normal can be unhealthy or at least problematic because of their inability to deal with the rest of us that fall into that normal range of intelligence. Fortunately, nowadays, intelligence is seen much more broadly than just IQ. emotional intelligence, physical intelligence, spatial intelligence, musical intelligence, and so on. And others, it's like, oh, yeah. You can be intelligent in one or more of those areas and less intelligent in others. And it's okay. It's okay. We recognize culturally that even emotionality is viewed on scales similar to physicality. It's pretty easy to remember times hearing that person's too emotional. She is too emotional, and like that's a bad thing. And then other people, if we looked at another person who had no emotion, we go, yikes, that, you know, take a pulse. Is that person even functioning? So somewhere in between those extremes, if you will, of too much emotion and almost none at all, is where you and I would fit and say, oh, yeah, okay, that makes sense. If we don't have any emotion, or we have too much that is considered to be misemotion, like, wow, that person flew off the handle at nothing. Wow, what's going on with that person? We would say that's unhealthy. But on the other hand, what we're looking for is a range that allows us to express emotion, but it's appropriate to the context. So you go, oh yeah, that makes perfect sense. Now, if we were out playing and a snake bit us and we screamed, we would go, I think that's a healthy range of emotion. There's nothing unhealthy about that. But if we were sitting in a church service and all of a sudden, spontaneously, we screamed out, it's like, that's inappropriate. Yeah, that's, yeah, something that's not healthy. In this, how do we maintain health, brings to mind a couple of ideas: flexibility and resilience. You go, flexibility. We do want to be flexible. We do want to be able to move. And we do want to be able to bounce back from situations that might have imbalanced us temporarily. We want them to be temporary. We do want to be able to be resilient enough to rebound. But flexibility and resilience, we can say, oh yeah, they're the opposite of rigidity. Rigidity. There's a big difference between strength. We all want to, I want to be strong. We all be strong. You know, that's positive. It doesn't mean be insensitive, and it doesn't mean to be rigid, and it doesn't mean to be uncaring. It means to be able to hold the ground, hold the space that you're in, and be able to take in this energy, process it, still remain flexible, still remain resilient. I live in Florida. In theory, we have hurricanes. They are talked about way, way more than they actually occur. They may be happening out in the Caribbean somewhere or the Atlantic Ocean, but the number of them that actually reach Florida, very small. But it also serves this purpose, to talk about the difference between a palm tree and an oak tree. I grew up in the Northeast, where oak trees were normal and there were no palm trees. In a strong wind down here, in a hurricane environment, that palm tree will be bending, will be flexing, will be moving in terms of, just one second. Will be moving with the wind. Will not be resisting the wind like an oak tree or a large banyan tree, which are huge, magnificent trees down here. But, because of their rigidity and their resistance, they get injured by these strong winds. You want to be, and I want to be, more like the palm trees, in the sense that when the winds blow, when there are energetic inputs from the environments we find ourselves in, where people are saying or doing, or we're saying and doing things, we want to be able to bend without breaking. And that's healthy. It's interesting to compare Newtonian physics to spiritual law. I'm not sure exactly how that happens, and it's whether it's parallel or not. But let me just say that Newtonian physics says that for every action, there is an equal opposite reaction. Yeah, maybe. And on a spiritual level, I'm very fond of the law of cause and effect, which says we reap what we sow. And you could almost say, we reap what we sow, we act, and there is a reaction, equal and opposite. Well, maybe it's not exactly equal and opposite. And there are some people who want to dispute Newtonian physics using quantum physics. And some people want to dispute the law of cause and effect by invoking the concept of grace. Oh no, grace is like the magic eraser that lets me scrub out any kind of harvest that I might have earned through my sowing. Yeah, I think when you search on grace and you find that in Wikipedia, you can see there's tremendous disparities between how various religions talk about grace. But I think we probably could agree that grace is an ever-present, always available love from divine consciousness. It's not a commodity that you have to, I got to get grace to erase stuff. That divine love always exist, but it is not an eraser. Physically, if I take a rubber ball and I hold it out, say, 5 feet off the ground and I drop it, chances are that ball, even if it bounces off a cement floor, is not going to rebound 5 feet. You know, wait, what happened to the opposite reaction? What happened? Yeah, not exactly. That rebound is going to be a little bit less. There is going to be a loss of energy. If a person experiences cruelty, that person has the options of translating and expressing that energy that they took in as a reaction. They could express it as cruelty. But human beings, unlike the cement floor, have an amazing range that we can translate and express into. We could express the cruelty that we've experienced back out as compassion. Or we could turn it inward and feel guilt or any number of emotions and physical reactions as well. But the real creative power that we have is how we decide to translate and express the energy that we've taken in. If you took 1,000 people and you had them sit down and they all ate broccoli, the fact of the matter is, not all of us would translate and express that broccoli in the same way. Some would be more athletic, some would be more intellectual, some would do all kinds of things. You know, use their intelligences in a variety of ways. And that's the way it ought to be. That's healthier. I would suggest that the key indicator of our emotional health, and frankly, it's going to be mental health as well, and it will impact our physical health, is the vibrational level of our translations and expressions. If what we decide to do in the face of these energy patterns that we've taken in, the environmental signals that we've been subjected to, either by ourselves or by others, and the way we translate them is the key to our health. So if we recognize that, it's like, oh yeah, being aware is healthier than being unaware. Somebody years ago said, ignorance is bliss. Like, now, I don't know the context in which that statement was made, but perhaps there's value there. I suppose if everybody knew what it was like to go into their own business or to have children or to do any number of things, it's like, wow, I would have never started that climb up the mountain. But because we didn't recognize how long and arduous the journey was going to be, we start on it and, well, I guess I'll just put one foot in front of another. Nope, I'll put one foot in front of another. Yep, I'll put one foot in front of another. And we do that persistently until we arrive at the summit of that particular activity. In that case, maybe ignorance is bliss. Maybe it's this internal drive, this internal impulse of human beings that say, you know, I can make something happen. I can make something desirable happen. I think that's cool. And our actions, if you think of these as actions, our thoughts are actually actions. Our feelings are actions. The words we speak to ourselves and others are actions. And of course, our behaviors that are observable by us and others are actions. And those that facilitate growth, nutrition and nourishment, healing, protection, fulfillment of need, work for us and others, and survival are healthy. They're healthy. And if those activities guide our lives, that's healthy. It's inevitable that you and I and every other human being will strive to get their needs met, and will strive to get our wants met as well. We want to satisfy our needs, and we want to satisfy our wants. And the efforts in those directions can be healthy, and they can be unhealthy. And the means that we use to determine our needs and our wants, and the means we use to achieve them, are directly related to our health. You know, the famous example when they came across years and years ago, the famous bank robber, and they said, well, now that we've caught you, we want to ask this question. Why do you rob banks? And he looked at the questioner as if he had two heads and said, because that's where the money is. He thought it made perfect sense to him, because money resided in banks, that if you wanted money, you would go to the bank and get money. Now, it hadn't occurred to them that he would put money into the bank, but only to take it out. He saw it as a place to harvest. Oh, yeah, that's where it is, you know. I guess if you didn't know how to grow corn, and you wanted corn, and you weren't going to buy corn, it would make sense that you would go into somebody's cornfield and take the corn. Like, yeah, there's got to be better ways, better means to achieve our needs and wants than that. But if our ego is driving us, we're going to end up with conflict. We're going to be in conflict with that higher part of ourselves, and we're going to be in conflict with other people. The people who own the bank and the money in it, and the people who own the cornfield. Like, wait a minute. Yeah. And the tools of the ego seem to be these displays of criticism and judgment and denigration and sarcasm, also violent impulses, double and devious dealing, slander, and others, all designed to get what we want, disempower somebody else, and prevent them from getting what they want, or to prevent them from preventing us from getting what we want. And you know, you use that stuff on other people, not only do we harm ourselves because we reap what we sow, but other people are bound to become unpleasant about it. Oh, that's not okay. That's not okay to act that way, do that, say that. like, makes perfect sense. Since everything is energy, and energy has to move, the habits related to moving energy can be healthy. You know, like, oh yeah, yeah, that's right. I want to facilitate energy movement. I want to facilitate energy movement. I want to take in energy, translate it, express it. Yep, okay, makes sense to me. And restricting our energy exchange experiences so that energy only flows one way, say it flows into us only, that's not healthy. That's not healthy. People who want to only acquire energy, they only want to take energy. I got to have more, I got to have more, I got to have more. And they refuse to share it, or they refuse to exchange it, are going to be producing unhealthy conditions in themselves and others. Likewise, the people who only want to focus on blocking the flow inward. No, I don't want to, don't give it to me. I don't want to ask for what I want. I don't want to ask for what I need. They're also engaging in unhealthy processes. In our energy exchange experiences, we can look upon this as, you know what? We will be investing our energy. We're investing our energy. We can draw it in and then invest it by directing it into other things. We use our attention, our intention, and our thoughts, feelings, words, and actions for the purpose of causing desirable effects. That's what we want to do. You know why? Because it feels good. It feels good, and it helps us grow. When we produce undesirable effects and we become aware of it, we go into the self-protect mode. We have to defend ourselves, hold on. We have to defend ourselves from ourselves, our own self-criticism, as well as the criticism of other people. We are investing. And that frame of reference, I think, can be very helpful to us. Of course, just like any other investment, we want a return on the investment. We want an ROI. And what's that ROI? Well, whatever it is, we want it to be satisfactory. We want it to be satisfactory. We want to experience satisfaction. Now, if we were in a business conversation, sitting around the boardroom or something, and we were talking about business investments, we would also be speaking specifically about ROI being measured in money and percentages. How much money? How many dollars? How many euros? How many yen? What's the percentage of that? What's the percentage of that? What's the percentage of that? But there is more to ROI than money and percentages. Here's an example, hypothetical situation. If I guaranteed you a 20% ROI at the end of every month, every single month, guaranteed, no chance of failure, you'd probably go, wow, I gotta figure out how much money I can put together to invest. So, if you invested $100 at the end of the first month and every month thereafter, you were gonna get $20. $20. You go, I invest $100 at the end of 5 months, I would have recouped my entire investment, and everything after that is gravy. Yep, yep. And if you invested $1,000, every month you would receive $200. Ooh, that's even more appealing. And how about $10,000 invested? $2,000 every month. Whoa, wow. That's pretty appealing. That's a great deal, right? That's a real great deal. You'd be like, oh, I gotta, if this is absolutely guaranteed, 100% certainty this is going to happen, I want to do it. But before you do that, let me tell you this. Let me tell you what the money that you've invested is going to be used for. It's going to be used for buying weapons, used weapons, on an illegal market, and then selling them in Africa to groups of people so they can arm their child soldiers. You know, children that they have kidnapped and forced to become soldiers at age of 6, 7, 8, that kind of thing, and train them to be killers. Now, what do you think of that ROI if you had invested? Horrible, right? You'd be backing up as quickly as you could to get away from the energy of that. So what's that say? That hypothetical situation, well, unfortunately, I think it's probably real in certain places and for certain people. But for you and I, it's hypothetical. It makes it really, really clear that we want something more from our investment of energy than just money. We want good feelings. Good feelings about ourselves, about our efforts, about the people that we're impacting with our investments, with our energy. That's what we're looking for. And it makes me wonder, is the highest ROI joy? Is joy what we're really looking for? Just think, if joy as an ROI happen to be the intention we have for every investment of our attention, what do you think the state of health would be for us? Oh, I'm experiencing joy. Oh, I'm experiencing joy. Oh, I'm experiencing joy. Oh, this is so wonderful. Doing the dishes is so wonderful. Doing laundry is so wonderful. Mowing the lawn is so wonderful. Going for a walk is so wonderful. Taking out the garbage is so wonderful. Doing anything. Like, wow, wow. Instead of seeing struggle or effort or drudgery in a future activity, like, yeah, we have a lot of those activities that we have to do. You know, it's a chore, it's a requirement. Have to do it, got to pay those bills, got to show up, got to do things. But what would happen if we set our intention prior to that activity to discover joy in it? I'm going to go take this activity, I'm going to do this activity, and I'm looking for joy. But you know, the self-talk would be vastly different, right? Personally, later today, I'm flying to New York from Florida. And yesterday I was saying, with the TSA and all the security, all the processes and the procedures and stuff, I was seeing the drudgery of that. Then I could take a bus to the rental car station and then turn around and drive a couple of hours to our hometown. It's like, is that how I want to spend my Sunday? You know what? I realized I was like an unwitting artist who is painting today's canvas, and I'm only using grays and black and other somber, almost lifeless colors. Like, and foolishly believing that those circumstances, the plane, TSA, flying, driving, are dictating the vibrational choices that I'm actually making. And when I became aware of that, it's like, wait a minute. There's a different reality. I am the one that's choosing. Circumstances are not choosing for me. Circumstances are just circumstances. They're external to me. So I can approach today's trip like I was planning, like a victim on his way to a prison camp salt mine to work and work and... Or I could look upon this trip as an adventure. Certainly, I'm going into changing fields of moving energy. A lot of people, a lot of vehicles, planes, processes, all kinds of stuff going to be moving around, including me. And so, my goal now is to discover ways to experience joy in those activities. As I put my attention on other people, I do people watching, and I notice this, and I have this underlying intention to experience joy. Like, this is cool. You and I know when we were to take an idea like this and transpose it over some other circumstance or some other person, it becomes real clear to us. Give me any gold miner in history. I'll tell you, that person could have discouraged himself to death by focusing on the reality. What? The reality that well over 99% of everything he touched, everything he looked at, was going to be rocks and dirt. Well over 99%. And wasn't going to be gold. That focus would have produced an unhealthy and certainly unsuccessful and, frankly, a man mining gold for a real short period of time. We already know we reap what we sow. If we want to harvest joy in every day, in every way, we would have to plant seeds of joy every day. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean you go out and plant a seed of joy at 9 a.m. in the morning tomorrow, and at 9:05 you look at your watch and go, well, where's my harvest? Where's my harvest? Doesn't necessarily mean that. We set in motion this immutable law of cause and effect. And if we do something kind for another person and expect reciprocation immediately from that same person, I don't think we really have done a kindness. We engaged in a business transaction. I'll do this for you, you do this for me. That's a business transaction. People even believe it's love, and they say this, right? I did this out of love for you, so I expect you to do this for me. That's not love. That's a business deal. That's a business deal. And to a relationship, that is not healthy. Ultimately, the answer to the question, what is healthy? I would say the answer is investing our energies, our attention, our intention, actions, in the activities of growth, nutrition and nourishment, healing, protection, fulfillment of need, work, and survival. I mean, after all, if that's divine intention, and we hook up with divine intention, and align our intention with divine intention, that's a pretty good partner to have. And if we do that for the purposes of producing joy for and love for ourselves, in ourselves, as well as in other people, so that they can do the same. I don't think we want to be the source of joy or the source of love for other people. We're just the conduits, and when they awaken to the reality that they can do the same thing, then that's what they're going to do in their environments, with themselves, with their families, with their work environments, with strangers, with whomever. And this starts to ripple outward. There's contagion of joy. It's like, oh, I like it. I like it. That is healthy in living to be 120 and healthy. But what is unhealthy? Unhealthy is when we prevent ourselves and others from this investment and that type of an ROI. When we don't let that happen for ourselves and others, we short-circuit divine intention, and that is not the way to be 120 and healthy. I would like to end the service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from letter 8 in Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. we believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness. And as we do and listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so.